You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And I'm Michael Barr. And this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports.
Today, super excited to be talking with Todd Ramasar. He is the founder and the CEO of Life Sports Agency. It's a global sports media and tech company geared toward maximizing client performance, brand value, all the rest of it. It's a perfect time to be talking to him. He works closely with a lot of NBA players. And we were just talking a little bit, Todd, before we came on about how the NBA, they have managed to become a year-round story. Lots of people looking at the summer league that just wrapped up. Of course, the draft. What do you make of this time of year? What's your life like right now, you know, just trying to sort of pull all these threads together?
Well, first of all, gentlemen, appreciate you guys having me on. And you know what? I tell you, it's good to be back because I'd like to think this is a normal off season, but with all the circumstances that all of us have been dealing with the pandemic, it was just great to be back, not just as it relates to free agency, but also just being back at the, you know, the NBA Summer League that just concluded yesterday. And, you know, just seeing some familiar faces and just being back in that normal cycle and routine, it's great. And then, of course, still being in free agency now, we're about going on week three of free agency. We've seen some interesting signings and seeing how teams are just preparing for this upcoming season, which will be back on a normal track of, you know, 82 regular season games and playoffs, and the calendar itself, the NBA calendar is back to normal. Because as we go back in last offseason with the bubble, and then obviously a shortened offseason, and then a shortened regular season, it's just good to see things back into a normal flow.
The NBA draft just completed a few weeks ago. Pistons got the number one draft, Cade Cunningham. I can go on down the line. That has turned into a huge media event, which years ago, in 19 dirt, you never heard of that back then. But now it is must-see TV, especially if you're an NBA fan.
100%. I think a lot of that is, you know, this is my, you know, 20th-plus year in this industry. I started when I was 19, and I tell you, the evolution of this business to that point is like, I attribute a lot of it to social media and just the news cycle in overall in sports. So, you know, the NBA draft, everyone's tuning in, and it's this big event and spectacle that, you know, that I think the NBA has done a tremendous job of marketing and branding. And, you know, for a fan, you know, for your fan base and people that, you know, follow their teams in the NBA, they want to tune in because they may be seeing their team land the next superstar face of the NBA. And I think that event is going to just continue to grow, you know, over the next few years, especially as the game of basketball and the NBA grows globally. You know, it's not just, you know, North American fans that are tuning in. You have fans that are tuning in markets globally, as well as, you know, streaming the event so that they could see it. And if they're not watching it live, just based on social media and how that news is being disseminated, they're getting excited about who these players are, both, you know, domestic players as well as international players that are being drafted.
Hey, Todd, it's Mike Lynch up in Boston. With two truncated seasons behind us now, did the players mm-hmm. who were free agents on this market this summer receive fair market value, do you think?
I think so. I thought we saw some good signings. I think if we look at all of the most recent free agency and markets, like the players that, you know, produced in their contract year and depending on what, in some ways, the market dictated, you saw, at least this, you saw this offseason that free agents were getting paid their fair market value. So I didn't see any surprises. I didn't see any surprises whatsoever. We may have read about some players, I won't name any, that, you know, may have received contracts lower than maybe anticipated, and there was less than a handful, but that was maybe because they timed the market wrong.
Yeah.
And they may have had opportunities in the past to sign contract extensions at what I think were their fair market value, but, you know, sometimes when you're trying to time the marketplace in your favor, sometimes it works against you, and we saw that this year. So I don't think it was a matter of players receiving less than their market value, opposed to maybe them timing the market improperly.
So, Todd, talk to us about kind of weaving together so many different elements in the NBA. You have player empowerment, which takes on obviously some social activism, but also, for lack of a better term, sort of economic activism in many ways. And the NBA gets written about and talked about a lot as, you know, a very player-driven league in many ways. What are sort of, in your estimation, sort of the upsides and the downsides of that? Because it is a little bit different, and you do have some old-timers, as it were, saying, well, it's just about the players, it's not about the teams anymore, and these super teams being created, et cetera. As you sort of distill all that down, as someone who is representing players, what do you make of it?
I think the league is evolving with their demographic of players, you know, and it's not just the league as a whole. It's also society. You know, for me as an agent, as I mentioned, I've been in the business now over two decades. You know, I started as a teenager in this business, and my perspective was really player centric because these were my peers. As I've gotten older and I've continued to guide my clients, my experience has obviously changed and evolved, but my lens is always staying in tune with what that demographic wants, right? Or how they're viewing the world. So for me, I think, you know, people are always going to have their opinions. I have my opinions that at times maybe isn't completely aligned with, you know, maybe is an old school way of thinking, or I say a traditional way of thinking, but I think you have to change and adapt with the times. And if you don't, then you get left behind because, as you mentioned, old timers, you know, old timers at some point become irrelevant. We all do.
Right.
And it's always the next generation behind us that is dictating the future. And that's where I commend the NBA. It's like, you know, they're progressive. They're forward thinking. In the moment, we may not agree with it. Or let's just, when I say we, is, you know, people may have their opinions that is not aligned with that. But I think Adam Silver has done a tremendous job of leading the NBA and its owners. And, you know, I think that's proof in terms of that they're doing a good job in terms of the growth of the game. And again, not just here in the U.S., but globally.
Yeah. So I want to press you on that point again, if I can, a little bit, because I feel like we're getting to something really interesting here, which is this notion of, you know, you played the game in college. You know, you can speak to these players maybe in a different way than agents of yore could in many ways. You think about all the press, and we've spent some time on this show, and I've spent some time talking to Rich Paul and sort of his perspective. I mean, you guys sort of collectively are bringing a different attitude, a different perspective that seems to have an effect on this broader both empowerment and sort of seizing control, I would argue, in a very good way, you know, and sort of shifting the balance of power. Do you agree?
I do. You know, I like to think I'm a very good listener. I think as I've gotten, again, more experience in this business, it's better to listen than to share my thoughts initially. I'm very intentional about listening to my clients and their perspectives and how they view the world. And, you know, unlike maybe 20 years or prior to that, like, you know, again, this generation, what I find, they want to be socially active. They want to use their platform to give their thoughts and opinions on social issues, humanitarian as well. And that's them. That's their voice. And I don't think it's just in sports. I think it's across the gamut. And, you know, we've seen it in entertainment probably for some time. I think sports is following suit, especially as sports becomes that much more synonymous with entertainment. And I don't see that changing. I think as, you know, for an older demographic or in even mine, it's like growing up watching the Michael Jordans of the world and other star athletes, they may not have been so out, you know, maybe outspoken or give their thoughts on some of these issues. But again, with social media and these platforms and all these world events that have impacted this generation that's coming to age, that's what they want to speak to. And some people agree with it, some people don't. You know, my role as an agent and a mentor and an advisor and a fiduciary and a number of other hats I wear is to guide my clients, advise them properly, but at the end of the day, support them and the impact that they want to make with their lives, both on and off the court, you know, whether it be their families or communities.
Speaking of old school geezer, that's me. I'm going to go back even farther than Michael Jordan. Can you imagine if Lou Alcindor had Twitter or if Dave Bing had Twitter back in the day? Compared to now, is it a different mindset today than what it was back in the day of like a Dave Bing or Ren Auerbach?
That's a great question. I think things go in cycles too, Mike. It's one of those things, that, to your point, like Lou Alcindor or Muhammad Ali, if some of these great athletes and social activists, like if they had those platforms, they may have been more outspoken on those platforms and be maybe more broadly accepted. Also, when you think about the business of sports, you know, how many opportunities did those great athletes and men and women lose in corporate America, right, in terms of sponsorship or other opportunities because those ideas weren't so widely accepted? I think now some of those brands, and you see Cause Marketing and some of their social initiatives, knowing that the broader demographic is changing and they want to have social impact, and not just athletes, I'm talking about consumers and fans.
Yeah.
They're a lot more accepting of athletes having their opinions on social injustices or philanthropic initiatives and things of such. So it's more broadly accepted. So those, you know, the Lou Alcindors of the world, you know, the Muhammad Ali's of the world, those were the, I guess you could say, the trailblazers for this, that this generation may look back to. but it's something that's constantly evolving. Who knows what the next few decades dictates and how that may be impacted even further from, again, world events and different trends.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Todd, this is something, a discussion I have with a lot of the agents we have on this show, and I'm involved with it at the high school level in Massachusetts. Financial literacy. It's an issue. It's a challenge. Sometimes it's a roadblock. Where do we need it? Do we need it in high school? Do we need it in colleges? Do we need it with every representative of every player in every sport? And is it a real hard issue to deal with?
It's not a hard issue if there's the right approach. And to answer your question more direct, it should start as young as possible. And it's in some ways a complex issue, in my opinion. Being African American, it's like, I was fortunate enough to have parents that are entrepreneurs and had success in business. So certain conversations, maybe at the dinner table, or even, maybe even some of the things that I've learned through osmosis of just being in the environment, it's led me to be an entrepreneur myself. That we can't say that that's the case for every demographic, right? So the big part of my role that I found success with my clients is explaining the why. I always say that to my guys, is always ask why. Like, why am I advising this? Or as it relates to financial literacy, like, how or why do things work this way? I think the sooner that we're able to educate athletes or entertainers or individuals that are going to be high income earners at a very young age that don't have, you know, that background in finance or financial literacy, the younger that we could get to them and educate them, I think the more empowered they're going to be in the future once they come into, that high income that they're earning year over year. Because what I find is if that foundation isn't laid early, once they're starting to see those checks that are in six figures or seven or eight figures, you know, every 2 weeks or every month for a long period of time, and there's not an understanding of the tax implications and just other things, it becomes much harder for them to understand those concepts in the future. And well, it's not because for a lack of intellect, yeah. It's just a lack of maybe knowledge or someone taking the time to explain things to them early on.
Well, and Todd, it's so interesting to hear you say that and about the complexity and everything, because we've been speaking a lot of late on this show, and I'm sure you have with your clients as well, and you've been thinking about it a lot as well, especially as a former college athlete, about NIL and the rules there and how much that has changed immediately the economics of all of this. How do you figure that in, especially with that lens that you have as someone who went through that process of being a college athlete with the former rules and now kind of weaving that into your business?
I think it's great that NIL is now available to high school athletes, student athletes, and collegiate student athletes. As a former student athlete, I think it's a long time coming and long overdue. I do have some concerns when things are introduced so quickly because there may, you know, I think I try to put myself in my 18-year-old self and not just what I, you know, what I experienced, but also what I observed from teammates that are still close friends and what they came through based on their backgrounds is, I guess my concern is, you know, for any 18-year-old, as you're a high-income earner, is the responsibility that comes along with that. I tell you guys, my best time of my life was college, you know, my college experience at UCLA. And it wasn't just the academics or the relationships. It's the social aspect as well. I think a lot of us could speak to that, right? And when you don't have much, you make the most out of circumstances. I could only imagine if I had access to $10,000, $100,000, or $1 million as an 18-year-old on campus or even in high school, that's where these individuals need to have a strong circle or family background or foundation to, again, educate them and in some ways protect them from themselves, because you don't know what you don't know when you're young. And, you know, again, when these are all 1099 income earners, not W-2, are they going to understand the tax implications that come along with those earnings? Also, if you're an international student athlete, you do not have the ability to earn in the U.S. because you are on a student visa opposed to a work visa. So like just making sure that these student athletes and their families and their circle are educated, I think is going to be crucial in the, not just the success of, the NIL implementation, but also making sure that it continues to grow over time, those opportunities. And there's no, I guess you could say negative outcomes that come about that people point to, say, NIL being the reasons for a potential fallout.
The NFL has adopted a rule, according to the league, that if a team has to forfeit a game because of a COVID outbreak, not only will the team forfeiting lose a paycheck, but also the team that was they were supposed to show up and play will lose a paycheck. I could see that being even more of a problem in the NBA because you're only fielding so many guys. First of all, is what the NFL doing, is it fair? And two, could we see something like that in the NBA?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a matter of it being fair or not is relative to the policies and procedures in place that are governing the overall health and safety of not just the athletes in, say, the NFL or the NBA, but are protecting the health and safety of all the personnel involved as well. I do believe in freedom of choice. Obviously, it's one's prerogative to be vaccinated or choose not to be vaccinated, but at the end of the day, if there's a policy in place, hypothetically, where you know all the athletes and personnel are vaccinated, and someone contracts COVID, and now it impacts the whole roster in which a game is suspended, then no, I don't think it's fair that their salaries are being impacted, right? Because that's no different than everyone coming down with the flu and they can't participate in that activity, right? In my opinion. Now, if there's freedom of choice and the policies are allowing that, then there need to be certain policies in place that protect both vaccinated and unvaccinated personnel, both players and team personnel, so that it doesn't lead to those outcomes that could then impact that personnel, including players financially.
Todd, why does it appear that the Players Association and the NBA has the best relationship with labor relationship, best relationship with the owners and the commissioner, as opposed to all the other major sports? Why do you think that is?
Why? And I just want to make sure I understand your question as it relates to the NBA specifically between, and the union.
There always seems to be a rift or a chasm between the baseball players and the commissioner's office, football players and Roger Goodell. The relationship between Adam Silver and going back to David Stern with the players seems to be the tightest relationship, business-wise, labor-wise, and even friendship-wise. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think it's a number of things. That is to Adam Silver and Michelle Roberts' credit as both the leaders of the union and the league. Also, we touched on it earlier, the NBA is a player-centric league that understands that I think their players' happiness and success leads to the overall growth of the NBA. And, you know, in times like this, when there's an act of God like a pandemic, you need a strong relationship to come up with solutions. Because the reality is, like in most labor negotiations, you have agents and players on one side, you know, the league office and owners on another side, and sometimes it could get contentious in terms of that negotiation. In times like, but even when it gets contentious, if you're looking in the same direction, again, you could have outcomes that are beneficial to both sides, and that's the outcome I would hope that any league or business would want. In the NBA's case, is having that strong relationship and that dialogue that's constant. And Adam has been, you know, in the league office has been open to, you know, conversations with players individually. You know, I've taken my clients up to the league office to meet with, you know, with Adam and some of the other senior executives there. And it's been great in terms of the support, not just in terms of their play on the court, but their, again, their social initiatives and things that, you know, resonate with the player or players as a whole. So I think it's just the outreach. It's a constant communication and dialogue. And then it just comes down to leadership at the top on both sides. You know, the fact that Michelle and Adam have a great relationship when it comes to those tough decisions that have to be made, whether again it's acts of God's or other policies, they're able to come, you know, find a solution or an outcome that both sides are happy with.
All right, Todd, before we let you go, just one last question is, as you think about this upcoming season, you know, you've got an all-star in your midst, you've got a top draft pick in your midst. What's the biggest challenge business-wise for the NBA as we get into what should be, hopefully, we think, the most normal season we've seen in a while? What's on your mind from a businessman's perspective?
You know, if all things being normal, when I say normal, not dealing with the pandemic,
right,
I think everything is great. The fact of the matter is we're in a pandemic still. I'd like to think, you know, we're towards the light at the end of the tunnel. We educate ourselves on these pandemics. They say 2 years, and typically we're out of it, even with variants like the Delta variant we're dealing with now. But when you're dealing with something that major, that's very fluid, that in some cases are out of our control, and when I say our, not me as an agent or my clients, but the league or society as a whole, it's like you're dealing with curveballs being thrown at you left and right. And, you know, right now, you know, as we went into spring, it's like we're very optimistic, things are opening up, economy is moving back in the right direction, and then we're hit with the Delta variant, right? And we're seeing infection rates increase. Obviously, we're promoting vaccinations. Now they're talking about a booster shot. Like, my point being is, when it's evolving like that, the toughest challenge in some ways you gotta just trust the other side, or you gotta work as a unit. It's not mm-hmm. players in the union on one side, the league on another side. It's you gotta deal with matters as a collective to make sure, again, that you're having the outcomes that are beneficial to both sides. And that's the challenge going into this season, is what is the winter going to bring? What is travel going to bring as we, travel back? We're dealing with, in some cases, two jurisdictions in the NBA. We still have a team in Canada.
Yeah.
And their laws and their approach is much different than it was here in the U.S. I felt it personally in working with one of my clients that plays for the Raptors in terms of that being the case, And it's not so simple. I think a lot of times maybe fans or spectators are seeing the league as just like, it's entertainment, it's basketball. But when you're dealing with laws and immigration and visa issues and a number of different, factors that are impacting the games or travel or even the case of the Raptors, where they had to relocate to Tampa, and
right.
you're uprooting families, not of just the players, but of personnel, where every home game is an away game. You saw how that impacted the Raptors, right? For example, that's a team that's accustomed to winning 50-plus games and being in the playoffs, that not being in the playoffs. We try to deal with it as best as we can. Trusting leadership and just working together as a unit, so that we have a successful season that's coming up, or you hope to have a successful season that's not going to be interrupted or impacted, where you have to cancel or reschedule games, and then you just continue moving forward, so that overall, from an economic standpoint, that it's a healthy season, and you just can continue building as we. Hopefully, put the pandemic behind us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and to your point, I mean, you even think about the different, laws and regulations in Los Angeles versus Dallas versus Atlanta versus New York. I mean, all that comes into play as well. Well, really, really good to get some time with you. Thank you so much, Todd Ramasar. He is the founder and CEO of Life Sports Agency, based out in Los Angeles, but if we know anything about this business, he's always on the move. So really good to catch up with you, and here's to a very successful upcoming season, and continued good luck with your business. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me on, and it's I hope to do it again sometime soon, and all the best to all of you.
Todd, thank you, sir. This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Michael Barr on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
Thank you, Todd. I'm Mike Lynch. You can find me at LynchyWCBB.
And I'm Jason Kelly. Find me at Jason Kelly News. We're here with you each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, talking about the world of money and sports.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio, around the world and online, wherever you get your podcasts.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.